Hey there, Pod Bless Texas fam. So the episode that you're about to listen to was recorded before the Democrats did the big historic walkout. They are now camped out in D.C. We're going to have a special episode in your feed to talk about the walkout after this one. But just bear in mind that this one was in anticipation of the special session. So stick around for this oddly timed episode. Our guest on this will be Stacey Sutton Kirby from the Texas Humane Legislation Network. Give us some really good information on animal rights advocacy in the state. So stay tuned to this episode, and we'll have one about the historic walkout in your feed shortly.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Pod Bless Texas. I'm Lillian Salerno here with my co-host, well, not here, via Zoom, with my co-host and friend, Kendall Scudder.
Hi, how are you?
Doing fine on this hot Texas day.
I like to think I'm here via satellite.
via something. Good to see you. And you definitely lost weight. I haven't seen you in a month.
Well, thanks. I have lost quite.
I can tell. Just your face.
Process.
Yeah. Are you doing gym work too, or just your normal not eating all day?
Can't do gym stuff because of my shoulder situation.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Surgery back in February. So I'm just trying to not gorge myself. So what a concept. You know, a great doctor once told me that if I lower my caloric intake, I will lose weight.
Gosh, what a genius. Kendall's referring to, I told him about my fat doctor, which I finally like I got a little bit of cred, but he was so funny when he just leaned over the table to tell me, had I heard the new research had come out, that if I would just lower my caloric intake, I would lose weight. He's a doll. I love that guy. I pay $100 just to see him.
I know listeners are you know, antsy because they haven't seen much of us lately. I haven't seen much of you lately either, Lillian.
I know. I know. I've just been spending a lot of time on the farm. I haven't been traveling or anything. Just taking care of some things that I didn't get to for the last few years. And then spent a lot of time on the farm and learning things I never thought I'd ever do. Like I have never lived in the physical world. I mean, there's a physical world, but like I don't barely know how to change a light bulb. I don't know how to use a saw. I don't know how to paint. I'm taking those things up now.
Oh, you're so handy.
I wouldn't say I could make it as a handy man or a handy woman, I guess. Like, I wouldn't pay me to do something, but I at least feel like I'm functional. And it's just something I never got to. And I felt like maybe it would open up parts of my brain I hadn't used yet. So okay. Here I am. So I can maybe change your tire now?
I'm skeptical.
Yeah, you should be. Again, I wouldn't pay me for that service, but anyway. So I can't wait to see you next week.
I know. Yeah, it's been a real tough couple weeks for us, just because we've just been so swamped and personal stuff and just the world. So
yeah,
what are we gonna do? Here we are. We're coming back.
Yeah, and it's been a really, really hard time for all Texans who follow, who would like democracy to remain in Texas, making national news. What a shit show of this Texas legislature. Justice. It was worse than anyone could have thought. It was worse. I believe it's worse than it was back when we thought it was bad. What was it? Two sessions ago. Worse.
I mean, really wish that the Dems could have leveraged a little bit of a better speaker there. Not really sure who sold out on Phelan first, but we should probably come for the Dems.
We really should. That Phelan selection, we called it here. We were worried about it. And again, this is where I know we don't like to criticize our own people, but I'm just saying, the Democratic Party in Texas has to get some balls and realize to govern, you have to have the respect of your constituents, and your constituents don't like when you sell out committee chairs in order to get a speaker who then goes and does what he did, which was put Texas in such a terrible position.
Yeah.
I mean, we're fighting for our lives here.
I mean, it's even hard to even figure out where to start. Because there's so much. I mean, I guess we should start with the electric grid, because that's the less sexy but the most important, probably. We live in a third world country that has had a faulty electric grid now twice in 1 year.
Yeah, we had a guest on, John Padalino, who I served with in the Obama administration on. You remember him. He's great. Anyway, he sent me a note.
Yeah, I was there. I was there for that episode.
Yeah, but he just sent me a note about a week ago. He said, if you get a chance, remember, because he reads all the bills, anything on electric, rural electric. He said what they did, the Democrats didn't say anything about what really is a tax, where House Bill 4992 loans are cut $800 million to cover the defaults and the passes, and then passes that on to Texans through the power wholesale power companies. The $800 million also includes Wall Street fees and state expenses, plus a 5% interest. So they pushed that through. No one even raised their hand and calculated that that's a tax. That's a tax. That's what happened.
So we just,
we just got taxed on this bad behavior of ERCOT. They get paid more from Texans, ordinary Texans.
Awesome. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So I didn't either. So anyway, it's terrible, that whole ERCOT situation.
Well, not only did we have a failed power grid and a pandemic waning, I hope, we didn't really address any of that this session, did we, Lillian?
I just can't believe they put these social conservative issues up without addressing any of the things like Medicaid expansion or pandemic response, education. They did anything, but we did get the ability to carry our guns anywhere we want.
Well, I mean, you already had that as long as you followed the law, but now there are just no laws. Now you can open carry with no licensing and no permits starting on September 1st. So if you are a police officer that has some shiesty people standing around with guns on their hips, you have no right to ask them any questions about their firearms.
Just incredible. The Quinnipiac poll came out. I just saw this on Evan Smith's Twitter, full disclosure, that it came out. 74% of Texans oppose the open carry.
Yeah, because it's bonkers. Yes. I mean, like, I'm a pretty pro-gun Democrat, man. And I have a real, I don't understand how any responsible gun owner would be okay with people carrying guns with no licensing and no permit. You got to have a license to fucking fish.
Yeah. Unlike Texoma, you have to have a Texas license, Oklahoma license, or a Lake Texoma license. I mean, you got to pay $60 to $80 to fish, even if you're a 13-year-old.
It's outrageous. We've regressed so much, and Phelan is a part of that. I mean, I'm interested to see if Dems are going to come back around for him at the next legislative session. Are they going to? I mean.
Because I'm not sure our listeners quite understand sort of the nuance of what happens when Dems roll over and what that means. This is what it means. Happened in the Texas legislature. This is what it means when you don't take it on at the beginning. And there was a lot of jockeying, and that comes from different caucuses within the Democratic Party. And I'm just calling them out. They cannot do that. Some people got chairmanships in order to vote for Phelan. And guess who's paying for it? That 17-year-old girl who needs to have an abortion, that's who's paying for it. That homeowner or renter that's didn't have their electric on and had somebody in their family freeze to death, that's who's paying for it. So when these Dems get up there, when we get them elected, they need to act like Democrats.
Well, and I think it highlights your argument, right? Because the whole reason he got there is because these Democrats were trying to make deals about how do we get the best Republican we can get. You roll over for a committee appointment, you don't really get anything else except personal stature. And now we're all fucked trying to figure out how to pick up the pieces behind it. When if you would have thrown a temper tantrum at the beginning, you know, or not caved on such little things like getting a chairmanship, then, you know, we could have ended up with like an Ashby or someone as the speaker, who wouldn't have been great, but would have been a hell of a lot better than fucking Dade Phelan.
Should have known by the name how bad he was going to be. I mean, he was terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Well, so here we are. So the way the legislative session wrapped up, as people are already aware, Democrats walked out to break a quorum and close debate over an obstructionist voting rights bill or voting repression bill that would have stopped very, very basic policies in voting, like early voting in the morning or early voting at night.
Not only stopped, but also added somewhere in the neighborhood of almost 20 violations that turned into felonies if you did them. They just did so much to that, which caused, you know, this was a good move. They Democrats stormed out of there. Good deal. You know, breaking a quorum, and therefore that hasn't been passed. It will be passed. And during that pace, during this period, Texas has been on national news nonstop, including Democrats, 16 of them, getting to go up to Washington and sit with Vice President Harris and going around the Hill. And I mean, they're darlings for people that are voting against voter suppression all over the country. Texas Democrats look great. I just don't know where, if it helps us.
Want to hear a funny story I can't reveal my source on?
Yeah.
I hear that there were not 16 that were actually invited to DC, but a bunch of them just showed up anyways.
That's what it sounded like to me, because I saw a friend of mine with one of the offices says, oh, the Texans are here. And she sent me a photo. I'm like, that's like six to me. That looks like Nicole Collier. That looks like Jessica. That looks like, Cuellar was there as a national, but it did not. I actually wrote him down. I'm like, so there were six, and then there were 16. So it was Jessica, Nicole, Chris, Royce, of course, and then two others. I can't remember. Those were the six. Pardon?
I think Sinfronia was there.
Yeah, Sinfronia, of course. But there were six, and then there were 16. Those 16, I know those offices on the Hill. There's nowhere to put 16.
Yeah, there were a couple of alleged members that didn't get invited and showed up anyways.
You know, I love that. I love that. Who cares?
They did good work. I'm glad they did the walkout. And so they are advocating to try to get voting rights legislation passed on a federal level to prevent whatever may happen in this special session that is now being called by Governor Abbott for July 8th. He has not. So in Texas, for those who don't remember from the last special session, the governor can call a special session, but you are required to outline what topics will be addressed during that special session, and only those items can be addressed. So we have not gotten the items that should be covered in that yet, but it's pretty clear that it's not going to just be voter suppression. It will also be other things. I will remind everyone also, it is not strange to even have a third special session if we need it for redistricting. During Ann Richards' term, she called them five times for special sessions.
Well, one of those, I mean, what people are talking about is Governor Abbott. I guess, what did he put out? What his edict is, if they don't come to an agreement on, in order to punish the folks for walking out and not establishing a quorum on the voting suppression bill, he's going to hold back their $7,200 a year pay, but also all the staff's pay. So that's a big.
And the staff doesn't just stop at legislative staff. I mean, an article came out with the Texas Tribune today that highlighted that it also includes cafeteria staff and janitorial staff. I'm like, just anybody that works at the Capitol, he just defunded an entire branch of our government out of being vindictive because the Dems were upset that you wouldn't even work with them when they were trying to do elections. Elections is the one thing that if anything's going to be bipartisan, it should be the way we elect people. Can we all just agree that you should have a way of electing people that everyone has confidence in? Like, the fact that that wouldn't have been bipartisan, you wouldn't have worked with the Democrats, good for them for walking out. I hope they don't even show up to the special session. Just break the quorum for the whole special.
What's amazing, I mean, no offense to West Virginia, which is a beautiful place, and I love West Virginia, but I think any Texan you'd ask would think that we were a little further ahead than West Virginia, and the Texans are in there talking to Manchin's people, because the senator did not meet with our folks, but his staff did. He's got a good staff, actually. And they basically said, we will take what you've got in West Virginia. Give us that. Let us have that as our what governs our voting. We are just so behind. We're going to be a state where you got to have a red dot put on your hand to make sure, like they do in the parts of sub-Saharan Africa when they have votes. I mean, no one's going to have any trust in our system if we keep at this. I mean, it's bonkers, bonkers. How do you think it's going to end up? What do you think, Kendall?
Oh, God. I think that there are two different trains of thoughts of what could happen. One train of thought, which is probably not likely, but is a little bit of hope that I hope happens, is that they use the special set or this existing session as red meat for their base. And then they're going to use a special session that people will follow less heavily to actually get some stuff accomplished. They will throw some red meat in there as they always do, but I hope it will, by being in a special session, maybe water it down a little bit. The other way that I think it can end if that doesn't happen is just lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, and it will litigate to death until it ends up at the Supreme Court.
One thing I always forget is just, you know, when Texas was taken out of court oversight for our elections, which just happened, what, two sessions ago, this is why we went back and did the very thing that we've always been under federal jurisdiction for elections. And I mean, most folks in Washington do not think, I mean, I hate to say this, but just people on the Hill do not think that the federal legislation on election reform is going to pass, or if it is, it's going to be so watered down. So that's sad. I just don't know. Didn't we win in November the presidency in the House?
Here's the thing. I know this. Everybody's going to hate me for saying this. I get where Sinema and Manchin are coming from on not wanting to get rid of the filibuster. Okay. Like, I don't know. I probably would get rid of the filibuster, but the idea of, we have a very challenging map in 22. I mean, we think things have been rough, but I mean, people like Joe Manchin is polling at 38% in his state right now. Like, he's probably not going to get reelected. And so we're going to lose a Democrat there. I mean, there's just Democrats all over the country that are in some tough races in an off year where Democrats, or the party in control of the White House, always loses seats. It's gonna, we very well could lose the Senate and maybe even the House. And if we bust that filibuster right now, we give Republicans free rein to do whatever the hell they want to in 1 year, right? And that is terrifying. And so I wish there were ways that we could figure out how to push it through or suspend the rules or whatever. Maybe the answer is to govern by executive action and just have the Justice Department start doing it and changing their policies on their own. And I mean, that's the kind of thing that the Republicans do, where if you don't like it, you can come back and fight it in court. But while you're fighting it in court, we're going to keep doing all this, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I had a discussion with someone that works, you know, runs a certain part of the, on the House side, and they're just so scared to death. I mean, they're only up, what, 3 seats. I mean, we did so well in 2018 and won all those seats. And then in 2020, we just didn't. And then we got these appointments. And I mean, when everybody was complaining, Pelosi was right. I mean, she was just trying to, you cannot bring these people into the administration. I need them. And she let probably 2 or 3 more than she should have, but they, you know, she can't put them in prison if they do, if people want to. But I mean, we are really in trouble.
And we are going to fare better in redistricting this cycle than we did in 2010, but we are still going to lose seats in redistricting. Texas is gaining seats. All these red states are gaining seats and blue states are losing them. And this is not, and that was by design in the Trump administration. They didn't do the census appropriately. Right. And so we have a challenging map. We have challenging new districts, and eliminating that filibuster could put us real Handmaid's Tale territory. And so
and we have, you know, Donald Trump is not in anybody's rearview mirror. Donald Trump is side by side. He is not in the rear view. He is coming to Texas to be on the border with our current governor talking about our border. And they are going to be showing picture after picture and graphic after graphic and using the word illegal alien, and they're stealing your taxes and they're stealing your women and they're stealing your children and they're terrible people and they're brown and we're white. that is all you're going to hear from here until the next presidential. And they know how to message.
They do.
And we suck at messaging. And I don't know what we have to do to get better, but we have to.
If I were in the Biden administration, I would have complete disregard for all of the lawsuits that would come my way, and I would executive order like a motherfucker. And I would, I mean, I think that's what Republicans do. That's what they're doing. And like, we just got to find creative ways to push things like they do, instead of always trying to do things by the letter of the rules or whatever. Yeah. Just do it.
Well, yeah, I'm very much, Texas is going to be in everybody's periscope because of the border issues. And, you know, from people that, you know, I believe Beto O'Rourke. I believe if somebody wanted to know what's going on at the border, I think you'd probably go to Beto before you went to just about anybody. And I think the Biden administration needs to listen to people like him.
Hey, we tried to tell everybody who our guest is this week.
Oh, yeah. Besides that, we're the worst.
Our guest this week is Stacy Sutton Kirby with Texas Humane
Network. Texas Humane Network.
Mm-hmm. Texas Humane Network, which is advocates for animal rights at the legislature. Governor Abbott just vetoed a bill that would have made it illegal to chain up a dog without food or water. She's going to be here to talk about their work on that. So really? Sorry it took us 25 minutes to announce. We are the worst hosts.
So Governor Abbott doesn't like the fact that people can vote. He doesn't like children at the border. He doesn't like women, obviously, because of his taking away the reproductive freedom. And he basically doesn't like, you know, kids in school or at college campuses because people can just walk in there and shoot them up now. He also doesn't like dogs. So why is that guy so popular again, Governor Abbott?
Spoiler, he's not. 48% of people in the most recent poll said he does not deserve re-election, whereas 46% said he did. So, so let's pivot right quick before we bring in Stacy. We do need to talk about the political ramifications of a lot of this and what's happening in the political world, particularly the race for AG, Attorney General, on the Republican side. What have we seen there, Lillian?
Well, what we've seen is the Attorney General, which is the worst, Ken Paxton, who's, you know, basically a...
Even Republicans are realizing he's no...
realizing that, how bad he is. I guess he's his... Did his trial get... I haven't followed it as closely. I just can't stand even looking at his face in the...
He's still indicted. He's still under... trial is underway, but the political side of it is Texas Land Commissioner George P. Bush, the son of Jeb Bush, the grandson of George H.W. Bush, the nephew of George W. Bush, slightly to the right of that family, he has announced that he will be primarying Ken Paxton. In addition to that, Ava Guzman, who's been a Supreme Court justice for, I guess, 10 years.
Long time.
She is the highest vote-getting Republican, typically, on the ballot. Sorry, guys, I have this whole cat situation. Stop.
So we have George P. Bush, who's basically disavowed from the Bush folks and doesn't even mention his father or grandfather or
and
uncle.
Supreme Court Justice Ava Guzman have each announced that they will be running against Ken Paxton in a Republican primary.
It's just amazing.
Those are big names to see. To see Paxton's, which are kind of in North Texas, a bit of a Republican stronghold, especially in Collin County. And then to see the Bush family, which is a whole nother level there. And then Ava Guzman, which represents this like, you know, she's good. Like, I mean, she's not what everything we would want, but she's not a crazy Republican. I'm sure she will be before this is all over with. But as of right now,
they'll try to swing her to the right.
Yeah, she's not been great on the Supreme Court. She always sides with corporations over people. But, you know, as far as Republicans go, she's not toxic. But I'm sure she'll get there.
On the lieutenant governor side, have they come up with anybody else getting rid of what's his name?
Just old man. And then in the governor's race, part of this is stemming from Governor Abbott getting primary challenges. And those primary challenges are coming from... Don Huffines, who was formerly in the state Senate, was defeated by Nathan Johnson in 2018. And Sid Miller, the current agriculture commissioner, they've each kind of announced exploratory committees for governor against Abbott.
Yeah. When Governor Abbott did his just pandering press conference, I guess, was it Monday after the legislature? Oh, talking about the border wall, that press conference. It was just sickening. I mean, it was, I don't know, the way he spoke about the border and the way he just pandered to his base. It was just not fitting for a sitting governor.
It's just gross. It's just going to get worse before it gets any better, unfortunately. 22 is a election for us, turns out. So,
yeah.
Well, I'm glad we're back in the swing of things, Lillian. Are we going to do this regularly now, or are we going to keep falling off?
It's so hard to talk about. I mean, it's painful to realize how far we thought we'd come. And then, you know, it's fucking depressing.
Yeah.
It just is. It's hard to talk about Texas politics in the middle of the summer. Where is the joy? Where is the finish line? Where are we going to get some new leadership? Where some wins, man?
All the reason to share laughter. Okay. That's what we've got for the first half. When we come back, we are going to have Stacy Sutton Kirby from the Texas Humane Network to talk about SB 449. She'll talk about it, but it is the bill that was almost unanimously passed in the legislature to stop chaining up dogs without food or water, and it was vetoed by Governor Abbott this week. She's going to talk about that as their flag piece of legislation that we're trying to get through this session, so stick around.
Dog hater Governor Abbott, stick around. Welcome back. We're so excited to have as our guest today someone who fights for the rights of animals and does great work. She's with the Texas Humane Network, Stacy Sutton Kirby. Welcome, Stacy.
Yay!
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
So before we start, what is the Texas Humane Network?
So the Texas Humane Legislation Network is the organization that I work for, and I'm not surprised that you talked about the Texas Humane Network. That is the Texas Humane Network is the education focused 501c nonprofit, but I am government relations for the Texas Humane Legislation Network, and we're a 501c4, so we can spend all of our time and money advocating for common sense mainstream animal welfare laws in Texas. We've been around for 45 years. We're nonpartisan, or I should say we're bipartisan, because the reality of politics and politicking is there are two parties in Texas at the legislature. We see animal welfare as nonpartisan. And we spend, as I started to say, we spend most of our time working at the legislature, but we also support local efforts and we give guidance to folks all across the state with their municipal ordinances and good animal welfare policy.
So you're this treasure trove of good policy for local governments, counties, economic councils about what one can do to promote animal welfare and survive in a country or environment where people have different feelings about how to treat animals, like what people do for children, but for animals.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that's really been brought home to us this week is that discussion around how you can't have a one-size-fits-all for Texas, because 254 counties, over 30 million people, we have folks that live out their lives in Texas as 100% Texans in some of the biggest cities in the nation. And then we have so many people like my folks that live up in Anderson County, you know, they live out in a rural area. So one size fits all doesn't work. One perspective dominating the conversation doesn't work. We work closely, not just with people who have, you know, from both political parties who are the elected officials, but we also try to bring the stakeholders in, the shelter managers and the animal services folks and the animal law attorneys who are the expert in how would something be litigated? Is it constitutional? The people who are in the business of breeding animals. Texas has a thriving commercial dog breeding industry. And so we try to bring folks together, not to water them down. That's not what I mean by compromise, but to try to hammer out policy that is balanced and effective across our diverse state.
Stacy, can you try to help us and our listeners understand which part of the bill was the part that was needed in order to ensure safety for animals? What did this bill do?
Yeah, so what this bill did is it clarified the existing code. There's been a lot of confusion that the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act was a new animal cruelty law, and it's actually not. The Health and Safety Code already regulates how you can restrain a dog, but the problem is it's so vague that it's unenforceable. So what the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act did is it went in and said you must provide water, you must provide shade, you must provide adequate shelter, you can't use chains because they cause harm and injury. And then the most important thing to make it enforceable is that it struck a 24-hour waiting period, which is actually in the code. And there's no other law I can think of, you know, like if you're speeding, driving down the highway, or you're doing something else illegal, where the officer says, well, I'm gonna wait 24 hours and see if you're still doing this, and then I'll ticket you. So the 24-hour waiting period in order to be able to write a citation, that had to go away. And the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act would have made it so that officers could have actually helped a dog in distress when they arrived at the call. There's also been some confusion around, did the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act introduce new penalties? And the answer is no. The Class C misdemeanor and the Class B misdemeanor, they're already there in the code. It's just that they never get enforced because of that 24-hour waiting period.
It is just absolutely bonkers that you would see illegal activity and a cop would just be like, all right, well, I'll see you in 24 hours and you better hope you're not doing this anymore.
No, I mean, those of Texans that are animal lovers, like all three of us, I mean, when you see these stories of how long it takes and these big tragedies where, you know, a former puppy mill or 100 dogs are in somebody's home, that, you know, we have to have a way to enforce it so the community is protected as well as the animals. And so, good work.
Right. That's why the Texas Sheriff's Association not only endorsed this bill all four sessions, but Sheriff Brian Hawthorne of Chamber County is the legislative director for the Texas Sheriff's Association testified. He said, we really need this in the rural counties. I don't have the protection of municipal ordinances. We rely on the state law. We really need this because of exactly what you just said.
Yeah. So this week, they're all over the news. Greg Abbott made some very controversial vetoes, which the governor has the ability to do in Texas. Not only can the governor in Texas veto bills, but can also line item veto the budget. In this instance, vetoed a bill that would have made it illegal to chain up a dog outside with no food or water. And it was thought to be pretty unanimous, supported, bipartisan, all the way across the board. What do you believe was the cause of Abbott vetoing this particular piece of legislation? Is there any hope of trying to recover it or salvage it in any way?
Well, let me take the first part of the first part first. I can't speculate. I don't know what the governor was, you know, what prompted him other than the statement and the proclamation that he's put out explaining his veto. And then I can't reconcile that with the fact pattern, such as this legislation has been brought in three previous sessions during which it failed. It ultimately didn't get across the finish line, but that then it was brought again in this fourth session. And we had we had 100 co-sponsors. I just went through the numbers again today. We had 7 senators that put their name on this bill, including the primary author, Senator Lucio, and the co-sponsor, Senator John Whitmire. And let's see, 88 in the House, including Nicole Collier, the original author of the bill, and then all the other co-authors. It was, yes, as you said, 100 co-sponsors, so widely bipartisan. And I really couldn't understand why, if something was so supported and endorsed, particularly by rural members of his own party, what issue he might have had with that. And in particular, you know, this has been a 6-year project, certainly there should have been opportunities to bring something to our attention. And we would have gladly gotten into conversation with his office to iron out whatever concerns that he had. I know our team was in contact with the governor's office, so I can't tell you why he decided to veto it. I could just tell you it came as a complete surprise.
So you guys were just flabbergasted. Wow.
Yeah.
Is there, so once it's vetoed, it's dead, right? I mean, like, you can't, there's no way to come back and fix it. There's nothing to salvage from it unless he adds it to a special session agenda, which he vetoed it, so he wouldn't do that, right?
That would be my thinking. So, sorry, I was remiss. You did have that two-part question earlier. Yeah, my understanding is there is no mechanism in Texas law where he can undo his veto. Mm-hmm. And you are correct, the legislators are gone, the session is over, and so they can't override his veto. And the special session, my understanding is set to start on a date by which their opportunity, the legislators' opportunity to override the veto, that window would be closed. So, you know, I'd say looking at this realistically, although the issue may not go away and our efforts may not go away, this particular bill, I am unaware of a way it could be revived.
So Greg Abbott basically looked in the mirror one day and said, I've killed a lot of Texans via pandemic and power grid this year, but why stop it, people?
Oh, I knew I was in for that when I came along, but I agreed. I've been hearing lots of it. The hashtag Abbott hates dogs was trending on Twitter. And as you mentioned, like, just so much attention, not just in the major markets in Texas, but national media and even international media. We were contacted by The Guardian, who won.
Wow. Yeah. Brits love their dogs.
I don't understand how you, just personally, how can you work in a realm where you have to be so nice to these jerks? I mean, like, it's hard to like,
don't put her in a bad spot. She's got to go back.
Saying, like you walk in when you're in the, there are so many people that can do this, and I just don't have the couth, right? To just walk in to people that are like, how do you work with Abbott after this, after he blindsides you? Like, what is it that, how do you manage like your temper when you're interacting with these people?
Well, maybe I'm not well suited for my job, because I tend to be the kind of person who wants to appreciate different people's perspective. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you this. I was raised in a very conservative household. Now, not overly political in any regard, but, you know, good old straight ticket Republicans. Was a fiscal conservative, and he was a career army man, a soldier, and then he went to work for Texas Department of Corrections, and they were strong on the military, and they believed, you know, all of those principles that conservatives hold dear about personal responsibility, and I was raised that way in our household. But at the same time, I was parachuted into community after community where I kind of realized at a young age, like, the people here say their football team is the better football team, or their church is the better church, or their, you know, their barbecue is the better barbecue. And what I kind of started to realize is that we grow up in a lot of times without being exposed to those other folks, not realizing that they're so similar to us. And if we can get past some of this stuff, we can start to see eye to eye with each other. And it's real hard to get people into conversations like that sometimes when they're already sure that they don't agree on this. But I think this bill was actually proof that you could get people to see eye to eye on this, because you mentioned it earlier, people love their pets, they adore their pets. So the first part of the answer, maybe I'm not well suited to this, because
sounds like you're doing a great job.
I think you are. I think it's that you actually have manners. That must be
But then I think on this issue in particular, it's just heartbreaking. You know, dogs aren't Democrats, they're not Republicans, and they can't vote. So we have to do right by them. And plenty of people, Republicans and Democrats, wanted to do right by them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you had more nonpartisanship on your dog bill than we've had on protecting children. we haven't gotten that far on protecting some of our most vulnerable children on some of the stuff that folks were trying to propose. So it's amazing work you guys are doing. And I just think it's just bonkers that Governor Abbott, I mean, he's gonna lose some dog vote, but you know, I know he was appealing to the don't tell Texans what to do piece, but I just think nobody wants to see a dog die from thirst that's being chained up, and that happens, especially in the Texas heat.
Well, Stacey, how do we handle this moving forward? Do we start tackling this issue on a local level? What's the plan of action?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if you're living out in a rural area, you are governed by the state law if you don't have a municipal ordinance. So if you're in an unincorporated part of the county, then this is the current state law that the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act was trying to fix is gonna stay the current state law. But in municipalities, if you don't have a municipal ordinance that is as strong or stronger as the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act, or you just want to improve your local ordinance, yeah, you can definitely be working at the local level. At the THLN website, we have something called the Tethering Toolkit, and it gives someone step-by-step instructions on how to build that plan and connect with people and get moving on passing a municipal ordinance at the local level. You know, the other thing that I'd say is I recognize that it's probably a cold, hard reality. This bill is dead. That's painful to me. But as I mentioned, the issue isn't going to go away, and our passion for protecting dogs isn't going to go away. And I'd say it's worth people's time to, in a polite way, express their disappointment, express their concern, writing letters and calling the governor's office to say, please keep it civil, but why they're disappointed and why they're sad that we missed this chance to make things right.
If people that were listening to Pueblos, Texas wanted to follow you or the work that the Texas Humane Legislation Network the work that y'all are doing, where would they go to do that?
They would go to thln.org. They could also find us on Facebook. So they could follow what's going on Facebook. But the best thing to do, I'd say, go to thln.org and sign up for the action alerts. And that way you'll get the email updates whenever anything is happening, whenever a bill has been filed, or there's a hearing, or there's an opportunity to contact your legislator. That's one of the things that we really like to be good about, is working with people who are rooted in their districts and are in conversation with their legislators, and making sure that it's not just Stacy in Austin who's making that phone call to some legislator who's never heard of me, but it's somebody that lives right there in their district that's communicating with them about why this bill is a good or not so good bill. So go to thln.org, sign up for action alerts, and follow us on social media. We are the Texas Humane Legislation Network.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Pod Bless Texas. But you don't get to leave yet, because before you go, you have to play everyone's favorite segment. It's called Obsessed! Obsessed, where each of us will talk about one new story for the week, whether it's politics or wasn't, we'll be completely obsessed with. And as always, in this segment, we start with Lillian Salerno. Lillian, what is something this week you've been completely obsessed with?
Because this Texas legislative session is so painful for me, I'm not going to talk about my obsess. Is going to be a positive today. This happened, I think it was reported in the middle of June. The great philanthropist, former wife of our Amazon founder, Jeff Bezos, Mackenzie Scott, came to Texas and donated $100 million to four Texas schools. Not the big name, not UT, not Texas A&M, not North Texas. She went and donated $100 million to schools that don't get that kind of funding. And I think those kind of things really matter. The University of Texas at Rio Grande Valley, San Jacinto College, UT San Antonio, Amarillo College, and those folks that go to those schools and the way they're funded without the big oil money that goes to the big universities are so important. So I just think it's hats off to her for caring about Texas and some of in rural counties that go to these schools that are going to get some of the resources that the big universities do. And I just love that she's given all her money away. And I wish you had married her, Kendall. She went and married her, a school teacher at a daughter's school. And you missed the opportunity. She already got married, sorry. And she, and her husband's now just helping her give away the money. You missed it.
That is that she's just saying, you know what, Jeff, that's fine. We don't have to be together around. I'm giving your money away.
All of it. You know, she doesn't have to worry about her kids being taken care of. They have a father worth more than the planet. So she's just saying all of it.
That's great.
And thank you, Mackenzie, for giving it to Texans. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Obsessed, Lillian Salerno. Stacy Sutton Kirby, what is something this week that you've been completely obsessed with?
Yeah, this is very uncharacteristic of me, but I'm actually completely obsessed with a band that's been around for decades that I never heard of until Thursday night, called The Sparks. And I did not know they were the progenitor of all this new wave and pop music that I was obsessed with when I was a teenager. And I got to tell you guys, this week has been bananas. It's been crazy. And it's been a lot of long hours. And then when I finally decide that I'm going to like turn my brain off of politics and off of, you know, this vetoed bill, and I just want to like chill out, I've been listening to 80s music like Blondie and like The Sparks and band from the 80s, and just like vegging out on the sofa with my husband trying to like, I don't know, escape briefly.
80s music, I think right now is a good thing to bet.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. It's the best.
Money from, or that's music from 40 years ago.
Don't remind me.
I mean, that's just like, to think about that is just crazy.
I know, it is. Good obsessed. That's, I love that. I'm going to look for The Sparks. I don't know who that is, but I know who Blondie is.
Well, with the Heart of Glass. She's very familiar with Debbie Harry and all the 80s romps. My obsessed this week is the list we all wait for. This week, Texas Monthly put out their best and worst legislators list. We didn't have a chance to talk about that much, but there are some of my favorites that were listed on this, and I wanted to make sure that I got to point some of that out. At the end of every legislative session, Texas Monthly, they do a pretty good job of putting a list out. You don't always like everything they say. You know, they don't always talk about, you know, it's not always good for Democrats, it's not always good for Republicans, but, you know, it's a pretty honest assessment. They do the best.
I think it's honest.
So this year on the worst list are a couple obvious ones. Briscoe Cain, ugh. Harold Dutton, ugh. Dan Patrick, ugh. But my old opponent, Bob Hall, ugh. Gary Gates, who ran against Liz Markowitz, who is our friend on the podcast, he made the worst list. Charles Perry, Kyle Biederman. Biederman's the guy who sponsors the secession legislation every cycle. Steve Toth, Brian Hughes. But one that I think is pretty funny, because you and I talk about this all the time on the podcast, the Senate Democrats made the worst list. The reason
you're going to get our friend in trouble here.
Oh no! I think I read the article. Weren't they referred to as furniture?
Well, they have. That was last cycle. The Senate. Oh, okay. Now they are just simply the worst, and they are listed. The Texas Senate wasn't always the most boring chamber, but now it is, basically, and they essentially said, they refer to them as woebegone losers who vote in favor of Dan Patrick's budget regardless of what it says. They fall in lockstep. They don't fight for what they believe in. Literally, woebegone losers. I thought that was pretty funny, because I have always had real issue with the Texas Senate Democrats. I don't feel like they fight hard enough.
Except for Nathan Johnson, who did a great job.
Well, I mean, there are always exceptions, and Nathan's fantastic. I hound how great Nathan is all the time. Nathan and everyone around knows how great I think Nathan is. But, you know, unfortunately, that is not always replicated across the caucus. So anyways, I was kind of obsessed with that, because I was really glad to see Texas Monthly picked up on that just like we did. Also gave Brian Slayton, a guy that I love to hate. I've been talking about how much I hate him for about 2 years before he even got elected to the legislature. He got the Cockroach Award, which is the person that just shows up to the legislature to create trouble. And he doesn't really come there to do anything good. So anyways, I've been obsessed with the Texas Monthly Best and Worst list. You can find that at texasmonthly.com. Head over there and check it out. They have some really good narration over those. And that's what I've been completely obsessed with. And this is Obsessed! Thank you so much, Stacey Sutton Kirby, for joining us today on Pop West Texas. One more time, where can people go to follow you or your organization?
The Texas Humane Legislation Network is at thln.org. Sign up for action alerts. You can find our organization on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can also email me. Oh, I'm giving away my email address, stacey@thln.org. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a blast.
Well, we're just tickled to have had you. Lillian, where can people go to follow you?
Yeah, thank you, Stacey. We loved having you on. And you can follow, I can be followed on the Twitter machine or through Pod Bless. My Twitter handle is Lillian_Salerno.
Can you be followed, Lil? Can you followed on Twitter? Because if I followed you on Twitter, would I get to follow anything that you've done in the last 2 months?
No, not really. I've sort of been taking a little break, but... But, you can follow through Twitter, through Kindle.
And we'll follow Lillian in anticipation to hear about stuff, because that long awaited, it's going to be great. If you want to follow me, they can follow me on all the social media handles at Kindle Scudder. You can follow us on Pod Bless Texas at Pod Bless Texas. On behalf of myself, Lillian, and the entire Pod Bless Texas team, y'all have a blessed week.